1st, 2019. I hereby call this to order. Attendance, the chair is here, vice chair.
Present.
Commissioner Bose.
Here.
Commissioner Landon.
Present.
Commissioner Bergen.
Here.
Commissioner Gill.
Here.
Commissioner McGinley.
Present.
Okay, if we could all rise, I'll ask Commissioner Sherwood to lead us in the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Do we have any adjustments to the regular session agenda? Hearing none, we had minutes from our last meeting. I hope everyone had a chance to read them. Are there any corrections or additions to the minutes?
The only thing I saw was my last name was misspelled, but that's okay.
So there was misspelling of Commissioner Bergen's name, and I believe I caught a misspelling of Commissioner Landon's name as well. Other than that, they were excellent minutes, captured everything quite well. So do we have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Motion by Commissioner Bergen, second by Commissioner Landon, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous. Tonight, first of all, do we have any business from the audience that does not relate to the subject that we're going to discuss in our main agenda topic? So if so, you can come and address the planning commission on any other subject besides that. Okay, hearing none. Tonight, we are having a public hearing for quasi-judicial continuation from the 7th of May, which is for 811-19-65 TYP Metro Plan Amendment and 811-19-66 TYP Zone Change for 3522 Game Farm Road, tax lot 1703-1540-03100 for Urban Transitions LLC. First of all, we'll ask for an explanation for the quasi-judicial hearing by our city attorney.
Thank you, Chair Quigley. The hearing tonight is a continuation of a prior public hearing, and it is a quasi-judicial hearing. The applicant has the burden of proof to show all the applicable approval criteria have been met, and those approval criteria are posted on the wall behind the planning commission, outlined in the staff report, and located in Springfield Development Code Section 5.3135 for the Metro Plan Amendment, Section 5.6-115A for a refinement plan amendment, and Section 5.22-115 for a zoning map amendment. Please pay attention to the following information about your rights in this public hearing process. Testimony, arguments, and evidence must be directed toward the criteria of approval that I just listed, or other criteria that you believe apply to the decision. If you believe that other criteria apply to the decision, please specify what the criteria are. If you raise an issue, the issue must be accompanied by statements or evidence that is sufficient to give the planning commission and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue. If you fail to provide sufficient statements or evidence to the planning commission and to the city council in the next phase of this process, you may be prohibited from raising those issues on appeal before the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals. If you are the applicant, you must raise concerns regarding any proposed conditions of approval to preserve your right to appeal and/or to seek damages in circuit court. If you fail to raise constitutional or other issues related to proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the planning commission and city council to respond to the issues, you will be precluded from seeking damages in circuit court. For members of the public, if you would like to testify this evening, please pay attention to these procedures. This hearing is being recorded on tape. First, Please fill out a request to speak card that is located on the side table and give that card to the planning assistant. When you are called up to speak, please testify from the podium to my left and not from the citizen seats. Begin your testimony by stating your name and address for the record. And finally, if you want a copy of the City Council's final decision, please provide your name and address to the Planning Commission assistant. The Planning Commission record will be forwarded to the City Council. The Planning Commission record includes the application and any supporting information, the staff report, documentary evidence, and written testimony provided to Senior Planner Andy Limbert from the beginning of this procedure through tonight's hearing, and all testimony and documentary evidence that is submitted to the Planning Commission during tonight's hearing. If you want, as well as the testimony from the prior part of this hearing on May 7th. If you want an item entered into the record tonight, please present that item to the Planning Commission assistant orally or in writing. If there's any question in your mind whether any material is in the record, please make a point of asking that it be accepted into the record. This is a continuation of a prior public hearing. You may request that the record be held open or the public hearing be continued again, but those requests are discretionary with the Planning Commission. Last, Oregon land use law requires that the Planning Commission act as an impartial decision maker. Planning commissioners must disclose any ex parte contacts or conflicts of interest related to this matter and must allow any person to challenge the Planning Commission for bias. A conflict of interest is a situation in which the decision maker, his or her family, or their business would benefit or suffer by the decision maker's decision. An ex parte contact is a communication to the decision maker that includes substantive issues regarding the application and occurs outside a public venue. Bias is an actual personal interest in the outcome of the decision or a prejudgment by the decision maker as to the outcome without regard to evidence and arguments submitted to the decision maker. Chair Cuevala, you may now continue the public hearing and declare ex parte contacts or conflicts of interest.
Okay, hereby continue the public hearing. First of all, are there any members that have potential conflict of interest or ex parte communications?
As previously stated, I am a realtor locally, but do not have conflict of interest with this specific case.
Hearing none others. Another question, are there any persons who wish to challenge any members of the Planning Commission for bias? Hearing none. Do we have testimony from the applicant? Do we have, at this point, I believe we're looking at testimony in support of the application. Testimony neither in support nor opposed to the application. Hearing none, I believe now it's time to have testimony opposed to the application. So first of all, thanks everyone who's going to testify tonight. We appreciate you coming in and giving us your thoughts. I'll give your name, and please come forward, speak into the microphone as directly as you can. Give your full name, address, and if you're in a space number, please give us that as well. And go ahead and come on up to the microphone. First person is Kristen O'Driscoll. Come up to the microphone and we'll give you 3 minutes. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Kristen O'Driscoll and my address is 3530 East Game Farm Road, space 18. I've had 2 weeks to consider what the owner's consultant had to say about the rezoning application, as well as what members of the public had to say. There's one thing that hasn't been clearly pointed out yet. The owner's consultant says that the loss of our low-density residential park can be made up for by the presence of other low-density acreage elsewhere within the city limits. That may be true, And it may look good on paper, but, and it may look like a reasonable trade of acreage, but it kind of misses the entire point. Low-density residential zoning is not the same as existing affordable housing. If the owner's rezoning application is approved, yes, the city will lose 13.6 acres of low-density residential acreage at this location. But more importantly, the city will lose 13.6 acres of existing affordable housing in a long-standing community that can never be replaced. Once it's gone, by definition, it's gone. 2 weeks ago, a housing expert who's spoken before Congress on housing issues spoke here at the Planning Commission public hearing about the long waiting lists that exist for all low-income housing in the state. Eliminating our existing affordable housing at the Patrician Mobile Home Park will guarantee displacement of 130-plus current residents when the park is closed. We know the park will be closed, we just don't know when. That is, if the rezoning application is approved, we know that. It will also guarantee additional stress on city resources designed to help low-income community. What city tax dollars will be used to assist residents who are on waiting lists, in other words, stuck on waiting lists, when the park closes? How are you going to help them? Or to provide welfare assistance to residents who can no longer make ends meet in the more expensive, affordable, housing outside of our park, because our park is quite affordable. Or beyond that, to assist with medical expenses. The stress of this is, you know, stress is one of the things that causes medical problems, and there are medical problems that are developing because of very stressed out residents who have no idea what the future will hold. And I guess I'm just saying that there are downstream impacts of the owner's rezoning plans that will directly affect the city's purse strings as well as that of the residents in our park. We implore you to look beyond the immediate request for rezoning and see the long-term negative effects both on our residents and on the city. And if the city determines that the additional tax revenue can't be resisted, we really hope that you can intercede and help negotiate a fair settlement for our residents.
Thank you. Next person is, and I'm going to guess on some of the spelling, Joe Bando, I believe.
That's correct.
Thank you.
My name is Joe Bando, residence 2586 Grand Vista Drive in Springfield. This residence is fairly close to the gateway area, so I happen to drive to the post office quite often. And when I make that drive, or my wife makes that drive, believe me, it's not an easy drive. You've got to figure what time to go, when to go, and how to get there, because the traffic in Gateway is at an all-time full rate now. I also own a mobile home park that houses 98 mobile homes. 196 people live there. We're completely full. There's no room at the end. No room. We have a waiting list of people trying to get into our park. If these people lose their home, there's no room at the end anyplace. There's no affordable land to build a mobile home park. In spite of what they said last week, there's affordable land someplace to build a mobile home park. Believe me, I'm a small-time developer. There's no room anyplace. It would be a crying shame to put these people out literally on the street. I'm offended by what's happening to this. I watched your forefathers in this planning commission a decade ago use that as a buffer zone, to create a buffer zone for low-density residential. Here we are 10 years later with the same thing on the agenda. And I just hope that you rule in favor of these residents and they keep this mobile home park open.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Susan Stottenberg.
My name is Susan Stoltenborg, and is it okay if I ask everybody who's in support of the petition to stand up? Is that okay to do?
Probably not.
That's a public
demonstration, and we try not to do this.
All right, I'll pass. My name is Susan Stoltenborg, 3530 East Game Farm Road, Space 2, at the Petition Mobile Park. I support everything that the other two speakers have said, expanding a little bit on it. My daughter and I moved into the Petition October 2018 after signing a 20-year mortgage. About 6 months later is when that letter arrived about the rezoning. And this is one of those situations where you say, how can this be happening? How can this happen? But it is happening, and it's happening across the nation. I would encourage everyone to Google TED Talks Mobile Homes. Esther Sullivan, sociologist, gives like about a 15-minute 101 on how corporations across the nation are buying up mobile homes, thereby eliminating affordable housing. And that is at the crux of this, is affordable housing. It's a crisis. Mobile home is a misnomer. It is a manufactured home that is transported, installed, and like any other home, settles. It is not an RV or a camper. Mobile homes have historically provided affordable housing from families with children to adult communities. Owning your own home brings stability. Bringing it back to Springfield, how is it possible that while the affordable housing is addressed in the Springfield 2030 plan, the rezoning and inevitable redevelopment of the Petition will uproot 130 seniors that will live where? Is that how affordable housing is addressed, by taking it away? I can't imagine that. Also, I can't imagine where everyone will go. The impact, as was mentioned, on their mental and physical health, losing their social supports, and this will impact our social services. And can you imagine how it would feel to turn your back and just walk away, abandoning your home? Because that's what it will be, abandoning your home. To the city of Springfield, if this rezoning and redevelopment is allowed to move forward, uprooting 130 seniors, shame on you for turning your back on this vulnerable population. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Ron Myers.
Ron Myers, Space 23 in the notorious Patrician. I would have a request. I submitted many emails to people all over the state of Oregon, and I find that email is inserted into your 444 pages. It was not germane. I made it very clear in the email that it was not concerning rezoning, so I don't know if that can be done or not, but that's my request that be removed. So, I would like to take a moment and just add a little historical levity to this, with your permission. I was commenting with my wife the other day about the rezoning application, and I found one in recorded history. We all know that God created the Garden of Eden, and Holy Scripture says it was a walled-in community. It even had a gate at the east end. No one knows how long these ancient ancestors lived in that home or lived in bliss. What we do know is the snake arrived to convince the residents they would be fine and they'd be even better off when a hotel conference center came into the park. That's my levity. The ease with which they lived was closed down, and they were relocated with much difficulty in their lives. They were grandparents, as many of us are, and they were great-grandparents. You see, the devil is always in the details, my friends. The devil The posted City of Springfield planning video on YouTube from your site indicates that you, the Planning Commission, and the City Council had proposed to streamline and make the Planning Commission rules more understandable. I hope that you're really engaged in that. It's difficult for me to read them. I found it interesting again and again in video presentations, the city of Springfield indicates that they're all about maintaining low-income housing, affordable housing, and low-density residential. And this situation here, this application, the devil's in the details, and it smacks, I think, of collusion. Having done a lot of research, I find there's ancient history concerning the intention of the city of Springfield to somehow add this lovely place, this garden with 12-foot arborvitaes all the way around it, into their crown jewel. You got a nice coup when you brought the Riverbend Hospital over. I'm asking, don't take away our first right of refusal. That was put in the law to protect us from rabid developers. And that's what you're doing if you approve this. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your testimony. Our next person is Joe Manning.
Good evening. My name is Joe Manning. I am a homeowner at the Patrician Mobile Home Park at 3530 East Game Farm Road, number 29. When Bob and I were looking for a home, the options were surprisingly few. We chose the Patrician because we needed a yard for our dogs, and even though it was in a 55 plus park, and we didn't consider ourselves old enough, but we are. There's more of the story about how we were honestly not aware of the intentions of the owner developer to end all of this, but I only have 3 minutes, so. You've heard stories from some of the 130 residents who are anxious about losing their homes. I've heard stories too. It's heartbreaking. Some of the stories keep me up at night. I guess I am old now at 65. One of my neighbors who is in her 80s calls me kid. She makes me feel young. There's another resident who has a train set, a big one, in his living room. He opens his home once a year to residents. Another woman in her 80s invites fellow artists into her home when she's feeling well enough to share ideas and to drink tea. So many stories, 3 minutes. So planners, if you are leaning toward recommending the rezoning, consider adding conditions. Management has not been communicating with us and we're scared. If rezoning is favored by the Planning Commission, we would like the following 3 conditions. To know when the park will be closed beyond a 365-day notice. We're not getting any younger here, and we need to plan ahead. More information could allow us to sell our homes if the timeline is respectable. We would be able to get some return on our investments and sell with full disclosure if we knew when the park would close. We would like the owner-developer to give us fair compensation. $6,000 to $15,000 is not going to help those who paid $30,000 to $50,000 for their homes. Consider the people who sank everything into their end-of-life homes and open your hearts. We would like park management to stop raising the lot rent every single year so the residents can save up for moving costs if the rezoning is passed. And last, please re-examine the traffic problems the rezoning would create. Traffic studies do not reflect current and future traffic flow on East Game Farm Road. How will emergency vehicles get in and out to the memory center, assisted living center, to the hospital a couple of blocks away with the mixed-use intention? Thank you in advance for your objective review. Our fate is in your hands. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next speaker is Paul Wilmore.
Hi, my name is Paul Wilmore. I live at 3530 Game Farm Road in the Patrician number 33. Let's just start out with my wife and I, we moved to the park due to our changing medical and financial needs. We purchased an affordable home with the intention of remodeling and fixing it up. It was a challenge though, all around this area, it's a challenge to find affordable housing. But when we drove through the park, it was obvious to us. You see how well the residents take care of it and have pride in their homes. Yards are kept and homes are maintained. Roads and common areas are clean and managed. The park community is close, as close, and they share many activities. If you get a chance, drive through the park, and I think you'll notice the same. Rezoning and the possible new development will only lead to displacing many vulnerable elderly people. Keeping the zoning as it is will continue to allow future residents like myself to afford housing. So, yeah, we just moved in probably 8 months ago and invested a sizable amount of money in our home. And now we're looking at maybe possibly having no market value on this house and even eviction when it comes down to it. So it is discouraging. So the park is unique. I think it says something to the community of Springfield. And I'd just like to see it continue.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Erica Wilmore.
My name is Erica Wilmore, 3530 East Game Farm Road, number 33 in Springfield. My husband just spoke, but we moved into the Patrician. We actually moved in about 6 months ago after looking for a home that would be affordable as my health is declining. We asked management directly what the outlook of the future of the park was, and we were assured enough to not only purchase our home, but to remodel extensively to bring it up to current standards. We re-roofed, put in new floors, windows, kitchen, two bathrooms, and everything else that goes with it. Lighting, electrical, plumbing, water heater, you name it, we've done it. And we've also moved a wall to accommodate future disability. All that said, the Patrician is conveniently located near shopping and other services, as well as the bus depot at Gateway. It seems to me that the city of Springfield has spent a lot of time, effort, and money to provide a place for Springfield residents to enjoy and access those services. However, as new development keeps infilling, those same residents are being pushed further and further away from those conveniences. Many of us will have nowhere to go if we are not fairly compensated for our homes. I don't think anyone here is fooled into thinking that there are no current plans to develop the property. It's obvious from the presentation materials being referred to by both Urban Transitions representatives and the City of Springfield's traffic study, a great deal of money has already been spent on this project. It was disconcerting to have surveyors in the park recently. I realize Urban Transitions is a business, it's not a charity, but please don't ignore community needs for the citizens of Springfield. I'm not sure what my husband and I will do when we receive notice of closure soon. We've already invested all we can into a home for our future. No other manufactured home parks are accepting used homes at this time, so moving them is not an option. On a side note, and this has nothing to do with anything, I'm really going to miss the bald eagles that are nesting in the area. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Pardon me, I'm taking notes. Our next speaker is Lori Hauber, or Humber.
Fine, however you want to say it.
Sorry.
Well, no, it's
please
my,
correct me.
It's my poor penmanship. Lori Hauber, and I'm a resident of Eugene, but I'm a staff attorney at Lane County Legal Aid.
Could you please give us your address?
Oh, I'm sorry. For Lane County Legal Aid?
That's fine.
376.
Whatever you address you wish to communicate.
376 East 11th Street in Eugene, 19401. And so I'm here, and what precipitated this was several weeks ago, residents in the park reached out to, as Reverend Ron Meyer said, he reached out to people all over the state. And so several people reached out to both myself and to John Van Landingham, who some of you may know is one of the state's preeminent affordable housing attorneys and has been practicing in that area for 40 years. And so in response to those inquiries, he and I went to the park and spoke to residents about this issue because people had a lot of questions, as you can imagine. And in listening to what they had to say, which, as you've heard both tonight and on May 7th, is gut-wrenching to hear how this is going to impact people's lives, it struck me. And so I was curious, I'm not a land use attorney, but I started looking at Goal 10 and looking at the Metro Plan, Springfield's 2030 Comprehensive Plan, the Gateway Refinement Plan, trying to make sense of all these pieces. And without going into too many details, what struck me is, of course, the need to balance, as the Metro Plan states, on a case-by-case basis, to balance what aspects of the proposed amendments are consistent with Goal 10 and consistent with the plans, and also what's inconsistent. And as you've heard, as I've heard, there are inconsistencies with policies set forth in the plans that all fall under Goal 10 that provides that framework for those policies. So things like preserving affordable housing. Obviously, this will have the opposite impact. It will eliminate housing for 79 households and encouraging home ownership at all income levels. Well, as people have said, many, if not most, people in the park are lower income. And I don't have the exact AMI, but if we assume 30 to 50% AMI is where most residents fall, the only viable home ownership opportunity for residents at those income levels is a manufactured home in a manufactured home park. And that's based on the data in the housing needs analysis from 2011. So this eliminates a home ownership opportunity. And then, of course, one of the other policies is minimizing displacement. And so I just urge you to balance all of these policies and procedures.
Thank you very much for your testimony. That is the end of our testimony against the proposal, unless there's anyone else who has if you do want to speak, please make sure that you do fill out a card with your name and address and the other. No, you can go ahead and speak now, fill it out later, but do make sure that you get it to our planning secretary.
Will do. Thank you. My name is Peter Hainley. I'm executive director of CASA of Oregon, Community and Shelter Assistance Corporation, 20508 Southwest Roy Rogers Road, Sherwood, Oregon.
Could you repeat your name again?
Peter Hainley. So CASA of Oregon was mentioned at the last hearing as an organization that works with residents in manufactured home parks to convert them to resident ownership. I'm going to enter a couple pieces into the record that talk about the work that we do and the parks that we've converted throughout the state. So for the last 12 years, we've been doing this work, and we got involved in this work during the spate of closures that happened in 06 through 09, where thousands of folks were kicked to the curb and had to basically go find some new affordable housing option. A lot of those resulted in early deaths. It resulted in folks not being totally displaced from their community because they had to move far away. So I think you need to consider the impacts that are going to happen if this park closes. Another thing I'd like to comment on is in the testimony from the last package, there was some testimony that was neutral related to the toolkit that the city formed. And CASA provided some information for that toolkit. and participated in a meeting that happened in September of last year, where the findings to date of that toolkit were presented. And the toolkit was designed to help cities in the event of a closure of a park. And as I listened to the city staff and the mayor talk about the outreach that they had done, I was struck that the outreach was only to the owners and never engaged the residents. And I thought, well, this is really interesting. So we're going to make policy for, we're going to come up with some solution without talking to the people that are most impacted by the solution. I found that to be reprehensible. I found it to be reprehensible. And I also wondered, how could you make a decision on behalf of other people? We're going to move you to some new undetermined park. That just doesn't square with, I think, how we should be operating. I mean, if we're going to look at highest and best use, then we should, by God, really consider the folks that are living there and consider that perhaps their homes and their lives are the best use for this. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Certainly. Ms. Brandley, could you go ahead and fill out one of
these? I will. Cards?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
At this point, do we have a summation? Oh, we have one more person. Again, same thing. Please read your full name and fill out a card when you're done speaking.
My name is Sean Rodine. My address is 1790 Alder Street, Eugene, Oregon. So the first issue I want to bring forth is in the staff report on page 10 under finding 20. And this reads that the proposed metro plan diagram amendment will retain the existing surplus of low density residential buildable land within the UGB of Springfield, which allows development of manufactured home dwelling units. So while this gives you the idea that there's land for manufactured homes in Springfield, this is a little misleading, because while this is true that they are permitted in low-density residential areas, very few of the homes in Patrician qualify as or are defined as a manufactured home dwelling unit. In fact, they're classified by the city as a mobile home because most of them were constructed before 1976. Therefore, even though there is land available for manufactured homes, these homes could not be moved. And even if they could be moved and not in low density residential areas, there, as you've heard already, there are no vacancies for homes to go into these parks. I would also like to reiterate that goal 10, the statewide plan goal, states that, and I read, municipalities shall encourage the availability of adequate numbers of needed housing units at price ranges and rent levels which are commensurate with the financial capabilities of Oregon households and allow for flexibility of housing location type and density. Very similar language is put forth in the Metro Plan, and on page 12 of the Gateway Refinement Plan, it reads that a diversity of sound, affordable housing in the neighborhood is a goal. So I ask you, does Springfield have adequate numbers of housing units at price ranges that are commensurate with the financial capabilities of Patrician residents? I also ask, does Springfield have flexibility of housing location type and density for residents with the same financial capabilities of those Patrician residents? My sense is that the answer to both of these is no. So why does it make sense to remove naturally occurring affordable housing from the city's inventory and, if the land is developed, from the existing housing stock? This runs contrary to Goal 10 and the plans developed by the city. What do the plans mean if they can't be carried out? While the development elicits visions of thriving economic development, this is pure speculation. It's also speculation that a new development would include any trace of affordable housing. What is certain, however, is that the park currently provides safe, affordable housing for 131 seniors. A zoning change would be the first step in doing away with this crucial source of affordable housing, which is why I encourage you to vote against the proposed zoning amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, could you please fill out a card with your name and address for the filing address? Hearing no other, I have one more person. Can you follow the same procedure then?
Hi, my name is Elise Weldon, and I am at 1559 Walnut Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. I learned about this about a month ago when one of the residents, Susan, who spoke tonight, sent me an email that this was happening, and I was just appalled. I also happen to know that another good friend of mine here is Teresa Bishop, who's representing the owner. So I didn't know anything before I came last May 7th to the hearing. And so what I've learned is pretty much from that hearing and tonight. I think that there's development and there's development. Are there ways to do development wisely and compassionately, and there are ways to do it less wisely, less compassionately? And I think rezoning this property into mixed-use high density is the latter. We heard from the gentleman last week, 2 weeks ago, that the first gentleman that spoke, that was the elderly gentleman who spoke about his property, mobile home park that he owned in Springfield and had owned many in the area, and how he couldn't understand why the present owner of Patrician needs to, why basically he isn't happy with what he's got. He makes good profits and has a reasonable living, and why do you need to be basically so greedy? I'm not used to speaking in microphones. My take also is that, well, okay, developers like to develop, it's their right, but why does it have to be on the backs of our most vulnerable citizens? Okay, this is a community that's, you know, much largely elderly, many are disabled. If they have to move, they aren't going to be compensated for these houses and mortgages that they've invested in. These are their nest eggs. They don't have the kind of buffer and backdrop or net to catch them, okay? So I think that's a really important consideration in your decision on how to go forward with this. You know, we hear in the news how the wealth gap is getting greater and greater in our nation and across the globe. And, you know, you as individuals, we as individuals can do something about that right now. This is your opportunity to do some good for the city of Springfield and not lose a community that works well together, provides good low-income housing. It's basically an assisted living community in some ways for this population. And, you know, my husband showed up last week also, and we were just listening to each of the testimonies from resident after resident after resident, and we were just devastated by their testimony. I don't think these people are devious or, I mean, they're telling you how it is. And I think the tactics of the property owner are reprehensible.
I think you're 3 minutes up.
Yeah,
so
I think you get my drift, so.
Thank you very
good
much.
Good luck with your decision.
Can you please make sure you fill out one of the cards?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who feels a burning need to address the commission? Hearing none, do we have a summation by the staff?
In your packets this evening, staff has summarized the themes that have been apparent in the testimony provided up to this point. I would suggest that those themes have also been echoed this evening. Concerns about loss of the homes, the lack of opportunity as a fallback measure, there's no place to go within the community. And these are fair statements because staff does not have an answer, nor does the applicant have an answer in their submittal as to how his residence would be accommodated should it be rezoned and the park closed at some point. Based on the information that's provided to you this evening, staff did provide additional testimony that was provided up to this afternoon. There's also was testimony provided this evening. Again, the themes have been maintained consistently with the testimony that's been provided. And so staff acknowledges some of the testimony this evening that it is a weighing of priorities. There is not a clear and distinct overriding policy in any of the comprehensive plans that wins out. And so as the metro plan indicates, is a weighing of these affordable housing, the housing stock in existing neighborhood versus the opportunity for redevelopment within the city. At this point, staff's recommendation would be to conclude the public hearing and to begin deliberations and provide direction to staff as to where the commission is leaning on this matter. There is no expectation of a clear, unanimous decision or direction that's provided based on differing viewpoints, differing backgrounds of commissioners. However, staff would be receptive to any direction that's provided. And the final staff report, based on the direction provided by the commission, along with a recommendation that will be forwarded to the city council, will be brought back to you at the next regular meeting on June 4th. And I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any resulting from either the staff report or any of the testimony we'll submit this evening.
Questions from the commissioners? At this point, do we have a rebuttal from the applicant? Applicant wishes to rebut.
Good evening. My name is Teresa Bischow. I'm here this evening with Bill Close, representing Urban Transitions, LLC, the property owner. I'd like to begin by acknowledging a clear policy choice that you have. And the choice is really, in the future, does the city want the land to be developed as a new single-family subdivision or a mixed-use area? It's not about affordable housing versus a conference center. We're doing a plan amendment and a rezone. So when the mobile home park is redeveloped, does the city want to see new low-density residential uses? And that's a valid vision to have. And that would be the current zoning. Or do you prefer to see a mix of uses that will bring employment, stimulate the economy, perhaps support the hospitality industry, and provide a variety of housing options, because the mixed-use zone provides greater flexibility and more innovative, creative mixing of uses rather than the R1 low-density residential zone, which focuses on the single-family subdivision. Your decision, your recommendation to the council, and ultimately the council's decision, it's really a policy choice, and it is about your own values and those who've come before you that have set forth the adopted plan policies. Your decision, or I should say the city's ultimate decision, whether to approve or deny, will not alter the property owner's decision to redevelop the site within 10 years. That's the reason Urban Transitions purchased the property in 2008, was to redevelop it at some point in the future. The city's decision on this proposed request for a plan amendment rezone will influence heavily what future development occurs. But again, it will not impact the timing of a park closure notice or the redevelopment of the property. In the staff report, as they independently and objectively looked at the application, prior to receiving public testimony, I do acknowledge that it was prior to that point, really, they provided a sound, I believe, legally defensible set of findings to approve the plan amendment and rezone. You definitely have the option to go a different direction, but I would encourage you to think about the future, encourage you to think broadly about all of the council goals and all of the plan policies. Again, the city's approval of the plan designation and zone change and rezoning will not change the terms of existing rental agreements. Those terms were agreed upon between landlord and tenant, regardless of zoning. And any decision whether to approve or deny the zone change request does not constitute a park closure notice, which is mandated by the state and which the property owner has every intention of completely following. I did want to acknowledge some of the extra stress that the residents have experienced by seeing surveyors on the property. It was not our intention to time it so closely to this public hearing. And in your application, when we submitted it, we had a blank page for Exhibit G, which I submitted this morning, or not this morning, close to five today, in which I submitted here in the record as well. And Exhibit G is the survey map recorded at Lane County that simply surveys the property so that the record is clear what property is being the subject of the rezone. So in closing, we really appreciate your time and all of the energy and commitment the residents have put to make it a very livable, wonderful community, and we thank them for their testimony. But we do encourage you to vote yes. Thank you. That concludes our rebuttal comments.
Thank you. My next agenda item is possible questions to staff or public. Now, would that be from, that would be from the commission?
Correct. If you have questions that would need to be answered during the public hearing, then that's the appropriate time to ask.
I have one initially that it relates to some of the testimony from Reverend Myers. Apparently there was some sort of email he was talking about that I'm not sure what it was and whether we have a copy of it or whether it's...
Out of an abundance of caution,
tell us about that.
Staff included pretty much everything that we could that was sent to us regarding any activities associated with Patrician primary, and it was presumably in response to the notification that there was going to be a public hearing. If there were some informational items that are requested to be excluded from the record, we'll clarify that with Pastor Myers, and we can remove it from the record. But staff did not want to exclude anything accidentally that was otherwise intended to be included in the record. So we've included pretty much everything up to this point we can. The only things that have been difficult to include are like links to videos and websites. We've provided the actual textual link, but not the content of the websites that have been referenced or the videos. But everything else has been included. So.
So if the commission wants to exclude that information from the record, then we could follow up with the reverend and determine what that piece of information is, and then if you make a decision at the next meeting, then we could bring that to you to exclude from the record, and I think you could put out there that that's information that you're not considering in your decision. If you do consider it in your decision, then it would be part of the record. I think he's asking that you not consider it.
I believe I know what the content was, and it was pertaining to some of the practices on the site with the interaction between the residents and management. It wasn't specific to this application. I believe that may be the content that was being asked to be consultable.
So I was just confused as to what was being discussed. And just as long as everyone is aware and happy with that. Further questions for staff? Have any consideration or requests for continuation of the public hearing, the extension of the written record, or both?
I
I believe you can make a request for continuation and we can consider it.
I'd be happy to do so. Do I need to come up front and do it?
I think it would probably be a good idea to go ahead and tell us your reasons for and which, whether you want to continue the hearing or the written record or both.
Okay, again, Pastor Ron, space 23. I would ask, and I forgot to do so, that was my intention, honestly, to ask for a continuation. As we continue to dive further, I'm finding issues that I think legally need to be explored. And so that would be my request to do so.
For the public hearing?
Yes.
Or the written record? Or both?
Public hearing.
I believe that is at the approval of the commission. There is another person who I believe wants to make a request.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Susan Stoltenborg, space 2. Written as well, continuation to accept written testimony.
Thank you. Discussion.
If I may, is that like for a week, 2 weeks? I don't remember hearing that.
10 years.
It hasn't been specified. I think it's within our jurisdiction as to whether
and again,
it can be granted and for
the city council's process that will follow yours is the record remains open for their hearing and their procedure, and they will have another public hearing that's completely de novo, which means it's not limited to issues raised before the Planning Commission. Any issue could be raised to the City Council, whether it's been brought up to you or not. And anything submitted after, sort of from the moment the Planning Commission closes, if you close the hearing and you close the record, from the minute that record is closed, anything that anyone wants to submit in writing will be forwarded to the City Council for their review. So at this point, it's in your discretion whether you think it would prejudice someone's rights not to be able to present you more information than you've already heard in making your recommendation to the council. Or if you think that there's information that you don't have that you need and would leave a record at our hearing over.
And I also think we should probably point out to the public that the city council hearing, initial city council hearing, is scheduled for
September 3rd.
So because we both the Planning Commission and the council go into a summer recess. So that would give, not only are you able to present any information to the people will actually make the decision, who's the city council. All we make is a recommendation, but you'd also be able to present any evidence, including new evidence, to the city council at that time. So if the, given that, do either of you wish to withdraw your request? I'll first put it to you before we discuss it. There's fine, I think.
My answer would be no, sir.
Okay, so one person requests us to keep the record open and the hearing. The second person?
As long as written is accepted and will be forwarded to the city council, I'm fine with that.
So you're able to withdraw your request for us to keep our thing open until, so that you can send anything to the city council. Okay, so we have one person continuing with the request, and the second person has withdrawn the request. So again, Reverend Myers requested it, and Ms. Stoltenberg withdrew hers. So discussion.
This is just a discussion on the continuation, is that correct?
Yes.
I personally would be fine with it. A lot has been brought up. Maybe it's worth a little bit of thought time, although it's understood that our purview is different from what City Council is going to do. Mm-hmm.
When is our recess scheduled?
I believe you have a meeting scheduled for the first week of July, and then we don't have any meetings scheduled for the rest of July or into August at this time.
Nothing in June?
Yes, you have your regular meetings in June. I'm saying that your recess would start after the first week of July.
And we have a full agenda for our remaining meetings, or am I, is that germane to ask?
Well, we have your next meeting in June scheduled for this item.
We have a meeting the 29th first, a special meeting.
Correct,
okay.
Correct. You have a special meeting on the 29th for the appeal, and that meeting will be limited to that appeal. We wouldn't add any other agenda items to that meeting on the 29th.
Okay.
So then your next regular meeting is in June, and we have this item already on your agenda, whether it's for a hearing or if it's deliberation and final decision or some variation thereof, there is space on that agenda. So it's, I don't think there's a problem accommodating it in your agenda. We can fit it in. I think it's really more a question of whether you think that there would be value in the decision that you would make in giving them an opportunity to provide more information, if there would be new or additional evidence that would be helpful to your recommendation.
And then again, continuing the question, are the remaining meetings in June, do they have an agenda already that you know of, or is there a possibility that there might be more opening in those?
We do have agenda items, but I think that there is room on the agenda to add something.
Okay. Thank you very much for that information. I mean, it gives us all an idea of what our time frame is, et cetera. So, continuation with the discussion.
My first question is how does this impact the City Council's scheduling?
As long as you make a decision before the end of July, there won't be any impact on the council, because we have this hearing scheduled with council on September 3rd.
Oh, okay. Because I'm referenced into the June the 3rd would be something else entirely. June the 3rd was when we originally was scheduling discussion on this, so that's going to be delayed until September?
The council public hearing has been delayed.
Oh, okay. So I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Sorry. Yeah, that until after the council's normal summer break.
Okay.
So that's when the council...
I hadn't heard about that. Okay. Thank you.
Did you want to continue your discussion, Commissioner Landon?
I don't have any strong feelings about how long we continue it, but I think one of the points that was well made is the property owner has a right to close the park no matter what we say. So what we're really arguing about is whether or not we're going to commit to a mixed use or leave it low density. That's, if I'm getting that right, that's our question.
Correct. And so the question about the hearing, whether you either continue the hearing or leave the record open, is whether or not you want to continue to accepting evidence. You will not make a final decision tonight. And so if you just need more time to absorb what has been submitted, which I would expect you would, I mean, we did get submitted information tonight, and he's going to need to have time to be able to incorporate that and address all of that in the findings. And so you're not going to be asked to make a decision tonight. So you will have time, no matter what, to consider thinking about it. But the question really before you right now is whether you would want to continue taking evidence, taking testimony.
Okay. I have a question now. You just heard in our training session that we want to make sure that our applicant has ability to respond to any new evidence or any testimony that's given. So even if we decide to either extend the public hearing or the written record, or both, there will still be plenty of opportunity for them to analyze everything and respond.
Correct.
Great. Okay. Myself, I'd like to go ahead and say I am in favor of only extending the written record. I really appreciate all the testimony that we've been given. I do think, I, in a way, I agree with staff that says, I don't believe I've heard a few new things in public testimony, but I also think that if we leave the written record open, we can continue to take people's new ideas on this without having public testimony at another hearing, which then will require a period of reflection to make sure that we've absorbed everything and responded to everything. Instead, if we were able to extend the written record for a particular period of time, then we as commissioners will get the written responses, staff will get the written responses, the applicant will get the written responses. We can analyze all those and come back and so I would support more of a extension of the written record, and just for a, maybe another week or maybe 2 weeks at the most. Would 2 weeks kind of, would that not be enough time? Would that be enough time to analyze and respond before our next meeting on this?
No.
It wouldn't.
No. If you leave the record open at all, there won't be enough time before your next meeting to deliberate at your next meeting.
Well, I think they could start deliberations at the next meeting, but they wouldn't be able to make a final decision.
That's correct. There's not enough time for you to make a recommendation at the next meeting to conclude your deliberation.
We need time to be able to incorporate your rationale into the findings that you would ultimately approve. So if we left the record open, whether it's for 7 days or even 14 days, you could begin deliberations based on the information that you had. You would probably not have any further staff analysis, but you would at least be able to look at all of the evidence that you had and start deliberating amongst yourselves and weighing those policy decisions to be able to provide staff direction to be able to then prepare a final recommendation for your review and approval at the subsequent meeting.
I believe the applicant wants to address the council. Commission.
Yes, thank you. We respectfully request, after you've closed the written record for any community member, that there be an additional 7 days for the applicant to rebut in writing.
Sounds very reasonable. Further discussion on extending. Commissioner Sherwood.
I would say overall I'm in agreement with what you said about leaving the written record open. Helpful, but only to a certain date. I think it would be good if we were able to give staff enough time to respond. So, and the applicant. So, if it's 7 days, just trying to do the calendar math here. So, how long exactly would staff want to respond to the written record? If the written record were left open, how many days before our next meeting would staff want? And, well, the applicant requested 7, right? Mm-hmm. So how long would staff want?
So I think what we would like to hear is from you as well. I mean, I don't know that, we can work on preparing some things, but I mean, I think we really need direction from you in terms of how we're going to start preparing that decision.
That would be in our deliberation.
Correct.
I'm in favor of closing. I would be in favor of closing the public hearing, extending the written record for 7 days, 7 calendar.
Would you like a motion to that effect?
I'm waiting for any other further input before we have a motion. Hearing none, do we have a motion?
I would like to move that we extend the written record for an additional 7 days.
You need to close the public hearing before you
and
can.
My apologies. I'd like to propose that we close. He does that.
Go ahead. Close.
That we close the public the hearing and that we extend the written record for an additional 7 days.
For the public and then 7 days after for the applicant to rebut.
Correct. Thank you.
7 days.
Okay, 7 days additional.
So the motion by Commissioner Landman, I'm going to go ahead and repeat it, is to close the public hearing immediately and extend the written record to the public for an additional 7 days, and then and be sure to include an additional 7 days beyond that to the applicant for rebuttal of any further written input. Did I sum it up correctly?
You did.
Second. Commissioner Landman, proposal seconded by Commissioner Sherwood. Any discussion?
For a quick clarification, it was already said, but I wanted to reiterate, that is calendar days, not business days, as we have a holiday coming up.
Calendar days.
Calendar days.
Okay.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
So the public hearing is hereby closed, and the written record is extended against all of us. Specified. Planning Commission discussion.
I would caution you not to have discussion or deliberation while the record is still open.
Well, the written record is still open.
Right. I think this closes that section.
Unless your discussion is what information you want people to submit to you and
okay.
In further comment. If you
so we're not deliberating, but we can continue, we can ask questions and continue discussion.
Yeah, I think you need to be very careful that you're just requesting additional information and that there's no deliberations that are entering in at this point.
Okay.
Could I suggest then that input from the public that would be helpful would be why, you know, again, we're looking at whether it's going to stay low density or whether we're going to go to mixed use. That's really the only, you know, so I think the discussion should be in that direction. I'm understanding things correctly. I think I am.
I'd rather just say that the public can provide whatever input written that they so desire.
Oh, yeah. Including, it's not a prohibition. It's just
try
if you can think of anything
try to keep
that
the
that
first
helps.
Words out.
Yeah, not a prohibition, but just if you can think of anything in that direction, because legally that's where we are, that would be helpful.
Discussion by the Planning Commission. I have a number of items that I'd like to bring up. I think I've brought some of them up in the past, but I've had a real opportunity to delve into some of the planning goals, both for the state and some of the plans for the city. And a couple different items. One is still regarding the transportation. I did ask at the May 7th hearing about the traffic study and the reliance on future transportation improvement projects by the city or ODOT. And as I understand it, I think that some of the roads around the application don't meet the state and city standards at the present time for traffic jams. And I was worried that if the applications are approved and any kind of development goes ahead, but that the road projects aren't completed, what would be the impacts on traffic? And I did not actually get an answer on that. And I think a reasonable assumption would be that it would degrade the transportation system. Also, under the amendment to the Gateway Plan, there was an actual direct call for transportation. This is the amendment to the Gateway Plan, Ordinance 6109. It called for transportation improvements to be open to travel by the motoring public at the time they are needed to support development. Now, that does seem to be a good idea in general, but I'm not sure if we could get some information as to whether that's still a requirement from the applicant.
I can provide a little bit of context there if it would be helpful. At the time that decision that that amendment was made. It was on remand from the Land Use Board of Appeals on a finding that the transportation planning rule at that time required those improvements at the day of opening. Since then, the transportation planning rule has been amended and now requires the city to look at the traffic impacts at the end of the planning period. So there is, we can follow up, and the applicant is welcome to give a rebuttal and we can give more information there, but that is a little bit of the background of intervening changes in state law from when Ordinance 6109 was adopted, which was to facilitate the Riverbend Hospital master plan development.
Thank you very much. That definitely clears up that concept in my mind. Regarding state land use goal number 10, I'm in agreement with some testimony that there's language in there that says the housing shall be commensurate with the financial capabilities. It defines the needed housing units as at particular price ranges and rent levels and includes manufactured homes, whether occupied by owners or renters. It also states, now this was kind of interesting, that the housing elements of the comprehensive plan should at a minimum include a comparison of the distribution of the existing population by income with the distribution of available housing units by cost. Vacancy rates at varying rent ranges, allowance for a variety of land, an inventory of housing in urban areas, including units capable of rehabilitation. I don't believe we've actually seen this inventory. It may be buried someplace, but I don't think I've seen it myself. It also says that implementation of Goal 10 also says that methods and devices to implement the goal should, after consideration of the impact on lower income households, shall include discussion of zoning, land use controls, etc. So I'd like to get an interpretation on that, saying whether that consideration of impacts to low-income households is a necessary precursor to any zoning changes. Then I looked at the Gateway Refinement Plan. There's a number of things on it that are kind of interesting and probably important to our decision. It says that development should take place while preserving local neighborhoods. It clearly shows, if you look at the plan map, that the Patrician Park is shown on the diagram as LDR and is listed as part of what's called the Game Farm single family sub area. And it calls repeatedly for preservation of existing housing and neighborhoods in the area, maintaining livability. Development should be required to mitigate impacts, maintain refinement plan's high quality of life. Then we go into the residential element of the Gateway Plan. It calls for residential development on remaining vacant land. And then it says that there should be a maintenance of approximate balances among LDR, MDR, and HDR lands. Now, since the plan was introduced in 1992, I assume there's been other zoning changes to the plan. So I wonder if the balance has changed significantly between the LDR, MDR, and HDR since 92, and would an increase of a 13-acre rezone to single family would increase the imbalance, and is there an analysis of the ratios, and at what point is there a significant change in the ratios, making things not necessarily in compliance with Gateway? So that's a question. So a bunch of discussion of densities that are kind of interesting. Seemingly, the densities that are requested in the, I can go into greater detail if it's required, but it seems as if the densities as they are existing in Patrician are not only above the Gateway Plan's required or desired densities, but are actually under above single family residential densities as they are as constructed today. So there, I think it's like 6.3 units per acre in Patrician, and it looks like the latest figures for single family residentials like 5.8. So then there's another interesting discussion that's buried in the industrial element of the Gateway Plan which again calls for minimizing conflicts, but it's between the McKenzie Gateway SLI site, which is all the area north of Patrician Park, and other neighboring land uses. Now, I see over and over again this minimize conflict language, and it seems, it's a question again, a single family residential area, should that be considered an anomaly in an area of more intensive development? Or should intensive new development need to be revised, mitigated, or denied if it presented conflict? And is that a reasonable conclusion to all these statements that ask for mitigation, preservation, etc.? It's a question. There's also a little bit of open space element in the Gateway Plan. It talks about retention of existing trees. Do we need a finding on whether there are, I've heard stories about owls and now eagles. Well, I don't know if we need another finding on that. And finally, I looked at the Springfield 2030 plan. It calls consideration of demographic characteristics about income, age, etc. Question probably for the applicant. We've heard testimony of residents from Patrician Park describing themselves as very low income and mostly seniors with also some disabled people. Now, has there been a survey of the actual income and expenses for these residents to see if they are part of a low income demographic? And since the applicant has access to rental and lease documents, would they be able to get that information to the commission to assist us in our decision making? Again, the Gateway Plan, the 2030 plan, reiterates Metro Plan goals to provide viable residential communities so all residents can choose solid, affordable housing and provide a wide range of housing choices for people of all incomes and housing types. Number of quotes from the Encourage Housing Diversity and Quality Neighborhoods that might be important for discussion would be that discussing encourage home ownership, minimizing displacement as neighborhoods redevelop, safeguarding condition and quality of housing stock, maintaining attractive and livable neighborhoods, and etc. And then under the residential land and housing policies, to accommodate, that's again discusses some densities that apparently where the Patrician Park has achieved those densities, or is achieving those, is in compliance with those densities, I believe. There's under a goal of foster housing choice and affordability, that I again talks about some type of inventory of identify and collect baseline data of low income housing and develop strategies and programs supporting and repairing preservation and improvement. And I'm not sure that we have that inventory given to us. So I, in conclusion, I really thank citizen staff, applicant, my fellow commissioners for their patience in allowing me to detail these items. And I believe we need further information on them and possibly might need some additional findings regarding plan goals and departments. Any further?
Commissioner Cuevilla, I am not going to try to attempt to answer all of your questions at this point, but I do want to point out a couple things, and that is in the the Springfield Residential Land and Housing Needs Analysis, which was adopted in 2011 as the basis for the residential land and housing element, our 2030 plan. So if you look in that analysis to table 5-29, there is an estimate of needed dwelling units by income level for the years of 2010 through 2030, which is the planning period. And so that table lists out income ranges by income market segment, so from very low, meaning less than 30% of the median family income, from 30 to 50%, what those income ranges were, the number of households that we had in those different income ranges, and the types of housing that would be financially attainable at that point. So that is what our analysis did to meet the statewide planning goals, and so this is the basis for our acknowledged plan. We don't have a more updated inventory beyond what we provided to you in the packet this evening, which was the basis of the city's affordable housing strategy. So it was not a comprehensive inventory, but there were maps that we provided that are a little more contemporary. Again, not comprehensive, but it does speak to some of the trends that we've seen since the residential lands and housing study was adopted in 2011.
Thank you. Where was that table 529 again, so I can look at that? It sounds like we do have good inventory, though.
It's page 61 out of the residential land and housing needs analysis, which was prepared by Echo Northwest.
And that's part of the gateway?
No, this is for the
2030
plan. Okay. Right.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry I missed that.
What's the ordinance number?
So that was adopted by ordinance 6268.
Okay, thank you.
And it was exhibit B to that ordinance. So exhibit A was the actual policies, the residential land use and housing element, which includes those policies, some of which you were referencing, and then exhibit B is like a technical supplement. It's that residential land and housing needs analysis, which provided the factual basis on which that housing element was written.
Thank you very much for that information. I missed that in the 2030 plan. Further discussion? Commissioner Bergen?
I'm sure it's been requested, but I would be curious to hear from the four property owners in the top right of that section. Not of that section, but excluding that section, because we're talking about moving us from low-density residential to mixed use. And those people across the way to the south, where there's a bunch of residential there, would see an impact. I think the most impact would come from those four in the northeast corner. And I would question if we're able to have testimony from them, if we've received testimony from them, because I feel that they, in addition to the residents of Patrician, they also will be impacted, and I would love to hear more on that, if that's a possibility.
We did provide notice to all the property owners and the residents within 300 feet of the mobile home park, so they were given the same opportunity to come and testify. But looking at Andy, it looks like we haven't received any testimony from those property owners or residents.
Okay, thank you.
Is it my understanding that one of those properties is an historic property per the Gateway Refinement Plan, too? Or is it apparently a classic house or something? I don't know if there's any restrictions that would keep that single family residential. Further discussion? Hearing none. We are done with our discussion, and we can move on to other business. Do we have reports of City Council action? Commissioner Gill.
So I attended City Council just last night. So there, we had an executive session regarding contract discussions, so I did not go to that. They had several public hearings with no public comment. One was on the proposed amendments to the signage in downtown, something they've been working on in work sessions for a while. They keep plugging away at it, so really trying to work out some good solutions for downtown signs. These were all first readings, I believe. The second one was for noise ordinance amendments, and kind of more clarification and updating around that, and making them more, I don't know, accurate to like noise today and how it's addressing the impacts of noise and not the words that are, not the content of the noise, because that is something that we're not allowed to regulate. So that was kind of an interesting discussion. And then again, updates and modernization and keeping up with state statutes for the municipal code regarding abatement of chronic disorderly property. And then they made some appointments to the Arts Commission. And that was pretty much it. Oh, they also did send a letter, or are working on sending a letter to City of Eugene regarding payroll tax and how it might impact people, Springfield citizens who work in Eugene, and they are in opposition to that payroll tax. So they had a conversation about the content of that letter.
Is that the payroll tax for...
It's a public safety payroll tax.
Public safety. Thank you. Further? Further? Council? Were there any other meetings that someone attended they could report on? Staff? Okay. Business from the Planning Commission? Hearing none. Business from the Development and Public Works Department?
Just a reminder about your special meeting next Wednesday. It will be a joint hearing with Ann Davies, the hearings official, who works at ALCO. So she'll be here to conduct that hearing with you.
Is there anything that we need to do to prepare for that meeting?
We hope to have the packets ready for you by the end of the day tomorrow.
Okay.
And so if you'll check the website and that like you normally would, and if you have questions ahead of time, feel free to reach out to Andy. He's also the staff planner on this one, so.
And is that how that normally happens in the UGB, that the initial decision is made by the hearings official, and then if it's appealed, it's appealed to both of us?
No, the initial decision was a staff decision.
A staff decision.
And so the appeal is coming to you for the portion inside the city limits and to the hearings official for the portion outside the city limits.
So the parcel is both in and out of the interesting.
Yeah. And to our research, we've not yet ever found this unique circumstance where one development was occurring both within and outside. So we've not done a joint hearings official planning commission appeal of on a type 2 decision before. So there may be some procedural ask the kinks to work out as we go.
Neat. New stuff. Anything further? Okay. Any, yes, at that point, an adjournment?